KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm sitting across from a man who has a great narrative, and I think, first of all, I've always thought fashion as being an art and fashion designers as being artists because they work with what most artists think about as being the primary form, which is the body. And I think no one does it better than my guest, Devon Scott, who's sitting across from me. The stuff has a really, I think, a sculptural feel, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And first of all, I just want to say thank you again for having me on your show. It's
completely
a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Excited to finally make this happen. Yeah.
You and me both. But I noticed that when I first went to your place and saw this insanely beautiful gray herringbone suit, which first of all had the look of something I mentioned to you. It felt like something that Cary Grant wore in the movie because it had a slightly fuller shape to the pant. But the what I love is what you do with the upper part of the torso, the shoulder plate and the actual shoulder cap. It's really sculpted, isn't it?
It is. It's a rope shoulder, a semi-rope shoulder, so it's not a large, you know, it doesn't have a huge rope, but it does have a semi-rope shoulder, so it gives that little touch of detail to the garment, and just adding a dart into a second dart on the garment, which gives a little bit more suppression, and it just gives, like you said, to the eye, it just really gives a lot of shape and just really brings that silhouette to the garment and gives a really beautiful shape, and the tailoring is really amazing, I think, is what I'm really about, is just the tailoring and, you know, also comfort, you know, so you want to get the tailoring right, but it also has to be comfortable. Because you know, you can have one without the other. If it looks great, but it's not comfortable for a person and they put it on, they really don't enjoy it because they're not comfortable in the garment. So being able to achieve a really great style and also comfort is really important in what I do.
Because I just want to talk a little bit about the way you came up, because I think of Southerners as being people who dress, and especially Southerners of color. I mean,
you
especially Friday through Sunday,
you
really see suits around. And I just wondered, that was a part of the life you saw as a kid.
Truly was. I grew up in a household where my father and my mother both, on Sundays specifically, you know, you get ready for church and it was like a ritual of getting dressed. And coming up, I would always watch my father take the time to bring out his little shoe shine kit, and he would shine his shoes and sit down there and get a chance to watch him do that. So I learned how to pop, and he was in the military as well. So I think that had a really profound effect on my sense of style and fit, because his clothes were always really beautiful tailored. And even with what I do now, it's always the military clothing really is a huge inspiration for what I do.
Because it's made for the body.
It is. It's totally made for the body, from a pair of, you know, the cargo pants they wear, although their cargo pants is still tailored, from that to, you know, the dress blues that he would have around the house. So I would always see that. It definitely had a huge influence on what I do. And like you said, those garments were definitely made for the body, which is what I do now.
Because I just wondered too, you said his stuff was always beautifully tailored. Did he have a tailor he would see? Did he go to a tailor when you were a kid?
You know what my father had, and he still has a couple of old suits in his closet from, he was in the military.
So where was he stationed?
He was stationed, and he went to Vietnam. He fought in Vietnam. But once he got out and got back to the States, he continued to be in the Army Reserves. So he was in the reserves in North Carolina. So I didn't have to travel a lot as a child. So we pretty much stayed local in High Point, North Carolina, which is where I'm from. But his style that he had, just really impeccable style, not only in his military clothing, but also in his, when we were talking about on Sunday morning getting dressed, his suits were always just perfectly fit. And I remember growing up as a kid, and it was the first thing I made, which was a pair of houndstooth pants. Yeah, it was the first thing I made for myself.
How old were you?
I was probably 7 or 8 years old whenever I saw these pants. And I always wanted a pair, but they didn't make them for little boys. And I wanted a pair so bad. So whenever I finally started designing and I found this fabric, that was the first thing I made for myself. Probably 10 years ago now, I made a pair of herringbone pants, houndstooth pants, because of just that inspiration of seeing my father's pants and always wanting a pair as a child and never actually owning a pair. So I was like, you know what? Let me get this fabric and make me a pair of these pants. And I love them. Yeah, I still have them, actually.
Here's something that I want to ask you. Yes. And it's something I've been thinking about ever since our mutual friend Mark Forster told me about your stuff, and I just fell in love with it, is I've always been fascinated by the fact that it seems to be so tough for designers of color to make inroads in the United States. And as somebody who's achieving some success and is also dressing men of color now, I wonder why you think that is.
Honestly, I think a lot of times in people, whenever they first meet me or hear that I'm a designer, they don't know exactly what I design. So I think a lot of times it just stems from people's perception of when they see a designer of color, they automatically think that a lot of times that it is only t-shirts or jeans and things of that nature. So until you really get a chance to sit down and hear my story or see the clothing, you get a chance to see that for me, it's so much more deeper than that. It's about taking things and really, like you just mentioned, just the tailoring and the craftsmanship, which is really important to me. And the design, you know, what I design is definitely so much more than just the simplicity of, but don't get me wrong, I still think the jeans and t-shirts and the hoodies and all that are amazing as well. But for me, I think it's just people really looking deeper into designers of color and realizing that it goes beyond just those few garments, that we also can do the overcoats and the trousers, and we have great design ideas as well. So just really being able to sit down and understand that we're just as complex designers as any other, you know, group of people. Yeah, yeah.
No,
if that makes sense. Yeah.
No, completely makes sense. Because I do think there is this kind of reductionist look at people of color. You can, we can only do streetwear.
Yeah.
And, and especially since the 90s, where that was kind of the big inroad that people of color made. So that there's still that kind of, I don't want to say stigma, but that kind of reputation. And it's hard for people to see past that, isn't it, a little
bit? Yeah, yeah. It is. It is. But, and then for me, I draw inspiration from streetwear sometimes. So it's not that I remove that from myself as a designer, because I think the streetwear growing up in North Carolina, you know, growing up in the 80s and the 90s, you know, I definitely, you know, I wore the baggy jeans. Yeah, totally. I wore, you know, not super baggy, but I definitely wore the t-shirts and cross colors and all the, and I, yeah, and even, I mean, but that's, it's part of who I am, and it definitely, it shapes, you know, what I do now, just being able to, the suit that you were talking about earlier, I think it was the herringbone suit. You mentioned the fit on that. Even like those trousers are a little bit baggier, you know, but it's still tailored, so it's not baggy and sloppy. It's baggy, it gives that extra room, but it still has like this beautiful drape to it, which I think probably goes back, and part of that is from growing up and wearing a looser fitting jeans sometimes, you know, coming up. So given that, you know, those trousers are a little looser fit, but still the tailoring is still on point with those trousers as well. So, yeah, I think I'm just here to try to open people's eyes to designers of color, and hopefully I can be a designer that will allow people to see that we do and can design more things other than streetwear, and just open the door for other young designers that may come after me as well. That's my purpose, I think.
Because you were talking about coming up in the 80s and 90s, and that was a time where if you were a person of color, you didn't really, I mean, there was this line, either you wore suits or you wore streetwear. And clearly for you, that intersection of the maybe some of the fit and the forgivingness, if we can say, of streetwear combined with that more dramatic fitting of the jacket, is really you bringing all these things that you are, that you grew up around.
Totally.
Into your work, right?
Because, and then it goes back to also, like we were saying earlier, going to church on Sundays, putting on a suit, you know, and wearing a suit and tie and shining my shoes. So I had that element of, you know, appreciating the streetwear, but also knew also, and my father was, he sat me down really early at an early age and really broke down to me style. And his thing was, have a great pair of jeans that do fit you well. Have a great pair of black shoes, a great brown shoe.
Do fit you well. Yeah.
don't only have the baggy jeans, you know, have a pair of jeans that actually fit you properly, that you can wear with the, and he always, And I remember coming up and I was like, is it that simple? And now that I'm older, I realize that style can't be that simple as far as having a great navy blazer that fits you well, that you can wear with a t-shirt underneath and a pair of jeans. But then you can also take that blazer and put it on with a great white button up and a tie and with jeans, or you can put it on with a great pair of trousers, having a pair of great sneakers that you can wear with that same look. So the wardrobe doesn't have to be, you don't have to have a lot of clothes to have great style. I think it's just really about having the right pieces, you know, and it allows you to go in so many different, in and out of so many different doors and always be very well dressed without feeling like you have to. And I think a lot of men especially think that the wardrobe, you know, it can be overwhelming sometimes because you feel like, where do I start? And it, I think it's just really sitting down and getting the basics.
It's interesting because what you just said, something I think really I find to be what fashion is about for a lot of men, which is intimidating.
Totally.
Because they feel like, well, I do need to have a lot of clothes, right? Mm-hmm. And what if I don't have this? What if I don't have that? And what it is that your stuff does, I think, is it gives confidence.
Yeah.
So you get that sense that you don't, the piece stands of its own and you start thinking about things to bring to it rather than going out to get a bunch of other stuff.
It is. And even when designing, I think for me, it's not about designing a collection that is about a season from this, from one season to the next. It really should be able to flow what you wore last season from that I may have designed last season. I think in 2 years from now, that same piece can fit into the more present collection, and you really don't, it's seamless. You know, it's really not about that was last season or this is this season.
That craziness where you're trying to sort of say last season doesn't matter anymore. You got to buy the whole new season again because that's another intimidation factor.
It is. And for me, that's, I try to avoid, I do avoid that. You know, I think the thing is whenever you're designing pieces that are, that have that timeless effect to it, it works now, but it can totally work in 2 years from now and two seasons from now, that same piece, you can put it into the collection and maybe just add a little, you know, depending on how you how you accessorize it, it totally feels totally new and fresh and modern. And that's the way that my design process works, is really being able to make pieces that are timeless and classic, but modern, you know.
So yeah. That's always been your philosophy, is that you have, you can start with some of your stuff as kind of a building block for your wardrobe and still keep it around so it doesn't, you don't go, oh, that's so 2013.
And for me, also just taking the time to make things really well, make sure that they're made well so that in 2 years from now, that garment not only fits into your lifestyle as far as not feeling dated, but also that it looks great and it's starting to wear really well. And that is super important to me, just making garments, taking the time and making garments really well so that it's an investment piece is what I like to say. I think when someone's buying a garment for me, they're investing into their wardrobe, something that hopefully will stay around for numerous years and can be even passed on, or their children can say, you know what? I'm wearing this blazer that my dad passed down to me, and it's still, you know, have a little, you know, some imperfections in it. But I think those things just add character to it. Those little, you know, patches you have to, you know, add to the garment. But I think that's just character, and it's beautiful. It makes the garment, I think, even that much more special. I have a coat that my grandfather passed on down to me. It was an overcoat that was just a black cashmere overcoat that I kind of held on for sentimental value, because it was from him and he was really special to me, but it was made well. And it was something that he had tailored. I'm not sure exactly when, but he wore it in his 40s and 50s. So, and so that's something that's really special to me, but because it was made well, it still stands the test of time. So for me, when designing and creating pieces, I always reflect back on, how is this piece going to look in 5 years or 10 years? Is it still going to be relevant? And I think, you know, the garments that I make still are.
We'll take a break. My guest is the very talented designer Devon Scott. He says the word sloppy whenever he looks at me. It's the treatment. We'll take a break. This one go.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back, it's the treatment. We're talking legacy with my friend, the designer, Devon Scott. And this really, what you're talking about, even goes back to what we talked about in the first half. You're seeing those houndstooth pants that your dad had and wanting to have something like that and making that for yourself. That idea is sort of saying that you do want to be able to say this piece has a story.
It should have a story, I think. You mentioned earlier a navy suit that you saw that someone was wearing. Actually, Andre Holland, we were talking about.
Yeah, mutual friend of ours.
Yep, Andre was wearing a navy suit. And that suit, it's a 6-ply wool, so it's just really durable. And it has like this, the cloth itself just tailors exceptionally well. But that suit, I remember when I saw the cloth, I knew I wanted to make a navy suit out of it. Because I think a navy suit is just something that every guy should have in his wardrobe, first of all. I just think it's just a great piece to have in your wardrobe, and
you can wear the jacket unsolved, and you can wear the pants with another suit jacket, and they'll fit it with everything.
And because of the cloth of this garment, I think in over time it just really gets better.
It softens.
It softens, yeah. And the way that all my garments are full canvas, so the canvas starts to soften. When you first put it on, it feels a little rigid, a little stiff, but over time, you know, just really starts to soften and break down and just really starts to mold to your body over time. And then, you know, after about a year of wearing a garment, it just really, you put it on and you don't really want to put on anything else. Yeah, it's just nothing else fits quite like it. And that just takes time versus buying some garments that fit really well initially, but after you dry clean it or wear it a few times, it slowly starts to lose its shape.
Because the cloth gives.
It does. Yeah, and great cloth gives even better. I think it starts with the cloth.
So that feel of the cloth to you, the fabric, is as important as the pattern, isn't it?
Because you can have and my mentor, Mr. Rocco Ciccarelli.
You should tell us a story about how you really got your start. You went to spend time with him. You basically apprenticed with him for a while.
I did, yeah. I spent a few years with him. And
talk about how you did that. Like, that's a great story.
Well, Tom Brown is a designer who you're wearing his sweater right now. And I really respect his work a lot. And he was one of the designers that I remember seeing his work. And it was just really an inspiration for me. I was working at Jeffrey, the boutique on 14th Street.
And Tom's original shop was right around the corner from there.
He had his original showroom there. And I was working there. And I'll never forget, we received our first shipment of Tom Brown. And it was just something about the tailoring and the quality of this garment, and I just...
Well, you said that was a time where suits were still pretty loose and almost like boxy, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And his stuff was exaggeratedly fitted.
It was. And it was just made so well, you know, so... And that was... It just drew me to it, and I found out, you know, more about him as a designer and his work, and just, you know, it was really inspiring. And then I met Mr. Ciccarelli, and he invited me over to his showroom.
And who was Mr. Ciccarelli?
He was actually the gentleman that was making Tom Brown's work. So,
and we should say that stuff was originally made not far from here.
Yeah, made here in New York, actually, yeah. So I was able to go there and meet him, and I never forget our first meeting. He was telling me that, you know, everyone says they want to do it. They want to design and they want to make clothing and they want to get in this business. Are you sure? I said, well, I'm pretty sure this is, you know, something I want to give a shot. You know, I want to give this a shot. And he told me, you know what? Well, I want you to be here Saturday morning at 6:00 in the morning. I was like, okay. So it started that morning, Saturday morning at 6:00 in the morning. Spent time with him then, and during the week, 6 days during the week, Monday through Saturday. I would be at his factory at 6 a.m. in the morning, because that was the time, that was would really be the only time early in the morning that he would have time to really spend with me and show me certain things, because after that he would kind of get really busy with his work. So, but if I was there at 6 a.m., he could spend, you know, an hour with me, hour and a half with me, and just really kind of take me through some of the things that he's learned over his, you know, he was a third generation tailor. So some of the things that he learned, he was sharing all this, the wealth of knowledge with me. So I was just there to soak it up, and all the things that he's taught me and share with me, I definitely still use today, you know. But yeah, just that time I spent with him really shaped and formed what I am as a designer and what I believe in should go into a garment, which is starting with the cloth. You know, you can have an amazing looking garment, but if you don't have great cloth, it just doesn't, it's not going to wear the same. And then again, you have to also factor in fit, and then you have to factor in comfort. So it's the quality of the raw goods, then it's the quality of the fit and the comfort. You know, if you have those three elements, or if you have one of them and then you're lacking two, or if you have two and you're lacking one, it's a little, the equation is off. So just really being able to have all those elements, and then I think when you put all those together, the gentleman that's wearing the clothing feels it. He feels confident, he feels comfortable, and he looks great.
It's the treatment. We're talking fashion algebra with our guest, Devon Scott.
I like it.
Hey, what are you going to do? Yeah. but it is that. And, yeah. and obviously, with your mentor, one of the things that seems to me, because the bit of time I spent with you, talking to you, the idea of you know, a chronology of a history of a long story that it doesn't just start and stop in one place, but there is a whole narrative behind something. Mm-hmm. You're really attracted to that, aren't you? This idea that these things live forever. They aren't just these things that live in and of the moment.
I am. I think that's not only important to me and what I do as a designer when it comes to clothing, but just everything I do in life. I really try to do things that hopefully will stand the test of time, that'll be around. I enjoy taking photos, and when I take a photo, I really try to take into consideration, would this photo here, if someone were to look at this 20 years from now, how would they view it? Would it have that feeling of just timelessness to it? Because I think even when that, with photography, with anything that you do, the arts, I think painting, people that paint, I think there's just something that's really beautiful about a painting that, or photography that just has that ability to just capture time and capture it in that moment. But something beautiful about that moment, being able to, if you go move forward 20 years from now and look back at that, it's just something really nostalgic about it that just really, inspire someone and brings inspiration and light to someone's life. So I think that's important in clothing, but that's important in everything I try to do in life, is just to really make things and believe in the things that I create will be able to stand the test of time.
It's interesting too, because it has me wondering, going back to what we were talking about in the first half of the show, and you're talking about seeing the stuff that your dad wore. And I think when we're talking about that stuff of the 80s and 90s, which is basically, it kind of felt like a tarp. You know, you just sort of threw something over your body and yeah. People can tell what you were. And I think what you do in terms of the stuff you make, it changes somebody's posture, you know? I mean, it gives you a sense of pride. Mm-hmm. So you kind of stand a little bit straighter in, because you want people mm-hmm. to see what it is you're wearing. And that is obviously a bedrock of what you do, that idea of building a piece that shows your pride in it, that also confers that pride onto the wearer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's the balance of the garment. If the garment is balanced well, it does. It's something about that garment when a gentleman puts it on. It does just, you stand a little bit more erect. And I think also the process that gentlemen go through when they get a custom suit, they know that they've spent the time of, you know, these fittings and, you know.
But that can be a little scary for people, because mm-hmm. if you've never had a suit made for you before, people, men especially, are used to going in and buying something. You see it on the rack, mm-hmm. you put it on, you've been seeing it in the window, so you know what you're getting. And it's a little bit of stepping into the unknown, the idea of you've seen this fabric, people have seen your suits from other people, but they haven't seen it on themselves. Mm-hmm. So that kind of fear if you just talk about walking through somebody that process of going from fear to anticipation to excitement to finally just the joy of wearing it.
For me, the most amazing thing about my business is that I get a chance to really sit down and meet people and talk to them and find out what they're looking for, find out what their needs are. And I'm not just selecting fabric without really getting a chance to get an understanding of the individual that I'm making the garment for. I think when you get a chance to have that one-on-one interaction, you look at, I'm constantly just checking them out and just understanding the person. And then it allows me to kind of help them because maybe they don't know exactly what they want. But for me, and this goes back to, I think, working retail. I worked at Jeffrey for numerous years. And I think that time I spent there is just that in itself was another just an opportunity to just get so much education from learning a customer that's coming into the shop that has no idea what they're looking for. You start to learn and read people and you just get really good at saying, you know what, try this on. And you start to get people. You understand, like, that person would probably like this. This will fit them well. This will probably, you know, their style. This will probably work with their style. So that time I spent at Jeffrey just dealing with a complete stranger walking in, never met them before, and you're trying to, you know, show them they're looking for a suit, and you got to just put a suit on them, and hopefully they go into the mirror and they look at themselves, and, you know, you see them stand a little bit more proper, and, you know, you get that initial reaction from them seeing themselves for the first time in the mirror in a garment. So that experience of working retail and dealing with complete strangers and putting clothes on a complete stranger and learning what would work and what wouldn't work for guys, I think helped me out a lot in what I do now, because I still do that whenever I sit down with a guy that's looking for a suit.
You brought up Jeffrey's, and that's a place that still has a lot of avant-garde stuff in them. These people come in and they think they should buy something just because they've heard about it or they read about it. And yeah. And what you're talking about is the ability to read and see that people maybe think they want something they don't really want. Because, mm-hmm. again, I certainly find out more with men than women that they want to dress like somebody else rather than dressing like themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that just goes back to knowing who you are. And I think the amazing thing about style is that, and personal style is that it changes as well. Like, I know I've gone through moments where I look back at, you know, I can look back at photos and be like, I wore that, you know, but it was at that moment, it was still,
say cross color. So yes, yeah, I'm sure there are quite a few of those pictures.
Yeah. You have those moments where, you know, you're trying to find your own identity. And I think that just comes over time. You learn who you are.
And when did that happen for you? When did you find your identity in terms of the way you dress? What age was that roughly for you?
Probably I'd say mid-20s. Wow. Yeah, mid-20s, late 20s. I think I finally finally kind of understood what I didn't like, and I would still try certain things, but I kind of knew then that I wanted to make investments in the pieces that, you know, that before then I wasn't making my own garments, so I would buy certain pieces, but I really wanted to, and once again, make investments in the pieces that I knew would last me and it wouldn't be in this season and out next season. So I think, just in my late 20s, I slowly started to, and I watched other people that I felt had great style, and I looked at their style, and I, you know, you learn from others as well. It's not that everything that I am now is definitely comes from, you know, picking from other people that I think have amazing style and, you know, just drawing inspiration from them and kind of building my own style from watching others that I felt had great style.
Wow, that's a great place to end, because we're out of time. Like, we could talk for hours, so you got to come back. Thanks. Okay. First of all, thanks so much for doing this, Devon. Really, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Elvis. It's a pleasure.
Completely my pleasure. My guest, you got to see his stuff. It's incredible.
Thank
you. His name is Devon Scott, our recording engineer here at Argo Studios. What a great name for a spot. It's our old friend, Paul Ruiz. The show is mixed by Kat Yore. It's edited by Blake White, who's associate producer. I'm going to go out and get myself some style. It's the treatment. catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.